Your national orienteering podcast. Map and compass, navigation skill, orienteering competition.
Jeg bommet noe jævlig på bossen her oppe.
Running like a motherfucker. Your national orienteering podcast.
Welcome to Your national orienteering podcast. This week, the Champions League in football starts again. And in orienteering, we have a Portugal U-meeting. Or what do you say, Ivar?
Yeah, Portugal U-meeting is, yeah, in the orienteering world, it's kind of like the Champions League of the winter season. Not always the best field of the winter competition, but if you look at it over the last 5 years, 10 years or something like that, on the average level of competition, I think POM is quite exceptional compared to the other races that are going on in January to March.
Yeah, but there is also some races coming up next weekend in Spain. So they have a competitor there, if we're talking about the competitions-wise. But before we go into what's happened at Portugal and Portugal orienteering meeting, we can have some news from Tio Mila.
Yeah, quite kind of a funny news, I would say. It was last week, some of this happy news in the Swedish orienteering website, the Federation website, about Tio Mila, then how their numbers of registrations is doing very well for Tio Mila this year, and they were comparing it to last year. And at the moment of when we are recording, it's 145 teams, so it's not bad, of course, with almost 3 months to go. But I find it very humorous that they are writing a positive article about the number of entry teams, and they compare it to the last year at the same time. And then, of course, you have the obvious fact that, yeah, last year Tio Mila was in Skellefteå, this year it's in Stockholm. So everything other than a huge boost in teams compared to last year is a big failure. And then when you also compare it at the same time, last year Tio Mila was 3 weeks later. So I don't think that would make it more positive for Tio Mila last year to have more competitors at the same, enter the red teams at the same time. So yeah, it's a bit funny, but you know, that's how the media and the PR work, that you have to make a positive spin about everything. And then I think the most fun part about the whole thing was that the guy from Tio Mila, he was like telling how nice it is with an international touch. They have teams from Croatia, they have teams from Litauen. Both times, the first time we have teams from Litauen and teams from Croatia. And then, I mean, yeah, from Litauen, that's not true. ETs have been around for 10 years or something like that. Last year, they were in the top 10 of the women's relay. So that was a funny mistake there from Tio Mila.
But they have sorted that out, and they have no, it's telling just Croatia and from Belgium. There is a team since first time since 20 years or something.
Yeah, and that's good. And there's also, yeah, I mean, there's always an international touch, and I think it's always cool to see new teams coming. Yeah, of course, we've had ICTISA for many years that have been doing good results on the men's side. It's been Norwegian, Swedish and Finnish team in the top, but we had UL Norska in the last few years. And then, of course, next year, the big new team up there is Fagrum Tisvilde from Denmark. So it will be good to have a more international touch of it all. And then, yeah, so for example, next year in the men's relay, we will have teams from at least five countries that are highly competitive, with Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, and then hopefully also Norska from Switzerland. So yeah, it's great to see new teams from smaller nations, even if they're not able to fight for the top. I mean, if you have a Belgian team or a Croatian team that is in the top 150 or top 200 or just able to finish, that's a good story.
Yeah, and about good stories and relays, it's also worth mentioning that a couple of days ago it was possible to download this year's app for Jukola. And of course, I had to go directly and do that on my phone. So I'm ready when we come to Finland in June to follow this Jukola relay, as maybe it's if you have to win both Tio Mila and Jukola in 1 year, then you take both the Premier League and the Champions League, maybe.
Yeah. So, you know, for Jukola, I have booked my flights to Helsinki. I booked my train tickets to Kauvara, and now I just need to download this Jukola app then.
But already we can talk about some big names have been out and running in Portugal. It has been really exciting to see the detailed terrain they've been running in this weekend, and it started on Saturday.
I mean, there was some kind of a soft start on Friday evening with a sprint relay, but that's not really one of the real races in the Portugal meeting. It's more of a new fancy stuff. The real stuff that starts on Saturday morning with a middle distance for and a world ranking event for the elite classes. Quite interesting terrain, looking at the live logs, GPS tracking, and so on. I really when I see these kind of terrains, I really want to go there because it looks really cool. Both, yeah, from it's nice runability, so even if you're not in super form, you can get a feeling that you're kind of running fast, and then it's some very nice technical challenge. In the first day, the middle distance world ranking event, there was not too big differences. In the women's class, it was just 2 minutes between the top five. We saw the Polish Aleksandra Hornik taking a win with almost about 40 seconds out of Teresa Smelikova, the young Slovakian runner, and then Evli Kasiku in third place. So two from Helsingin Suunnistajat at the podium, but the victory for Iktisa and Aleksandra Hornik on the first day.
Yeah, I had a little chat with Hornik, and she said she had a few smaller mistakes, but mostly it was safe and solid orienteering. And always good to win a world ranking event, even if it's early February.
Definitely. And I mean, it's she's been running some good races before this winter, in Turkey, for example, last week. So she's obviously been doing well in the winter training, and as we will see later on in the second race, that we will mention her name again. But in the men's class, I opened the live results, and then I was like, really? Oh, what's this? Oscar Hagström? Who is that? And that's the guy in second place. And then I saw the name and the club name, Oko Linné from Sweden. Ah, okay. So Oskar Sjöberg, he is now Oskar Hagström after his marriage with Sara Hagström last autumn. So it's not a new runner. It's a very experienced runner with a new name.
Yeah, and then they get a new career, maybe, in orienteering.
Yeah, second career now. He can start on blank papers and create a new story from now. But good start of the season for him, but it was only second place. He got beaten by Swiss Jonas Ecker with 25 seconds. And then in third place, we have Topi Syrjäläinen 45 seconds behind. And this was a really, really close race. Alexander Kratov in fourth place, Simon Hector in fifth place was only 70 seconds behind. So close race in the top here. And then, as always, when you go a little bit down the result list, you find always some interesting names. In the men's class, for example, in sixth place, we have Florian Fröhle, as a young Swiss guy. He was running Jaywalk in Portugal 2 years ago, but doesn't have big results as elite runner yet. In seventh place, we have the former Jaywalk sprint champion, Francesco Mariani. He's also a solid forest runner. In the women's class, we also have some very interesting names. A bit down in the top 10, in sixth place, for example, Tille de Smul from Belgium. I think this is one of the best results she's ever had. A sixth place in a strong field in Portugal meeting in a world ranking event, really good. And in seventh place, we have the former world champion, Ida Schwarz-Bubak, only 3 minutes behind. So even if she's retired for many, many years ago, she's still at a high level.
Yeah, we mentioned her in the last episode. It will be exciting to see which level she has. But this day it was Jonas Ecker was best in the men's class, and she had some smaller mistakes in the beginning, but under 1 minute in total mistakes, he said to me. So a good race from him there.
Yeah, and I think when you beat guys like Oskar Hagström, Topi Syrjäläinen, first of all, and also Kato, Simon Hector. I mean, these are good runners. So when you win a world ranking event in this field, it's a good day.
And they wasn't to finish after one race in Saturday. It was also a night sprint, we can mention.
Yeah, but it's kind of in a way like the sprint relay on Friday. This night sprint is an additional event, so it doesn't count in the overall, and it's not like everyone is running it. But also we see every year that there are some runners that have a more sprint focus, and they maybe go easy in the morning and focus on the night sprint. And yeah, in the women's class we saw a clear victory for Josefine Lind, 25 seconds ahead of Jendine Jelstad Rebord. So two of them more of sprint specialists, and then Alexandra Hornick, the winner of the morning's middle distance, she got the third place, which is shared with Kirsi Nurmi.
And in the men's class,
yeah, here we have a big name as the winner, a guy we will talk a lot more about today, as he is also the guest of the episode. Swiss superstar Joey Hawthorn. He took a clear victory, 25 seconds ahead of Francesco Mariani, and then Simon Hector in third place. And Joey Hawthorn, he was quite far down on the result list in the morning, so I assume that he was maybe not pushing full gas, saving himself for this sprint race instead, or he had a horrible race. I haven't actually watched his GPS, so I don't know that yet. But yeah, one victory of the two starts on the first day.
And in the second day on Sunday, it was long distance, actually longer winning time in the women's class than among the men.
Yeah, I think now that it's supposed to be the same winning time, and yeah, it was 1.5 minute difference. So I think the course setters did a good job there. We can start with the men here, because here it was quite big gaps, and it was also very, yeah, defining for the overall of the week. Simon Hector took a clear victory, 2.5 minutes ahead of Joey Hawthorn. Alexander Kratov in third place, he was 3:20 behind, so quite big gaps between the top three. Then we saw a young British runner, I think he's still a junior, Ewan Trainor. He was doing pretty well at the J-Walk last year. He was in the top 30 in the long distance at least. And then he got a strong fourth place here. And when I looked at the results, I was like, whoa, how is that possible? And then when I looked in the live logs afterwards and the split times and so on, yeah, I saw that he started 4 minutes ahead of Simon Hector and was running quite a lot with him. He got some help there for the fourth place. And then there's big gaps down. So for example, Jonas Ekker, the guy who won the middle distance day one, he's in sixth place, but almost losing 8 minutes. So yeah, as always in POM, the long distance are making big differences, and it's the key stage for the overall.
Yeah, and Hector, he was quite satisfied with this race. He was he felt quite heavy in the uphills, but even though it felt like the speed was okay, and but the way he said that it was tough physically. But the technical, it was good. And this day, it was quite not so good weather either in Portugal. So I think it was quite tough for them, with just some degrees and also rain.
Yeah, I heard there was also almost kind of snowing. So it was a tough winter day in Portugal. But yeah, in the men's class, it was big gaps. In the women's class, it was much, much, much closer. We have five runners within 1 minute and 6 seconds. And Alexandra Hornick took her second win in second days. Sabina Aumo, the young Finnish-Swedish girl that is running for Göteborg Majorna and is representing Finland internationally, she was only 14 seconds behind. And then Hanna Wisniewska took the last spot on the podium, 20 seconds down. And then just outside of the podium, we had the young Danish girl, Eva Ørnhagen Jørgensen, and also the Swiss Siri Niefeller within 1 minute and 6 seconds. So while the men had a big, big differences here, on the women's side, it was much closer, and the overall was much more open after 2 days on the women's side.
Yeah, Hornick said after the race that it was real challenge to get a good flow in the extreme part in the beginning of the race. But after that, it was a better flow technically. And those who have not seen the maps, we recommend to go into LiveLogs and see the extreme detailed areas there in some parts of the terrain with the stones. And yeah, it's difficult to read the map, actually.
Yeah, and also the following day on the third day, the middle distance, also world ranking event, we saw some runners were struggling, and among them were Alexandra Hornik. After winning 2 days in a row, she had quite a lot of proper mistakes, meaning she lost a lot of time in the overall, 6-7 minutes or something like that. She was far down the result list, and here with her first victory of the weekend, Sabina Aumo, after a top five in the first stage and second place in the second stage, she took the victory here in the middle distance, a small minute ahead of Eva Likasiku, and then Teresa Shmelikova with another podium. Eva Hjørnhagen Jørgensen was in fourth place, but she lost more than 3 minutes, and then the gaps were getting bigger down to Alexander Hornik and Hanna Wisniewska, that both did really good in the first part of POM. They were losing a lot of time here.
And Sabina, she's Finnish, but she speaks Swedish. So we communicate quite good with my Norwegian and her Swedish. So she said she was quite satisfied, really satisfied with the results and also with the performance, when you take into account how challenging the terrain in Portugal are. So, it was a good race for her. And as you mentioned, finally a victory also.
Yeah, and that meant that she was leading the overall with more than 4 minutes after three stages, more than 4 minutes ahead of Hanna Wisniewska. Alexandra Hornik, after winning two first stages, she lost more than 8 minutes actually in the middle distance, and she fell down to fifth place in overall. And then as the last stage is a chasing start, it was looking very good for Sabina Aumo, starting with the more than 4 minute gap, because when you start with 4 minutes, you have enough time to get into a good flow in the early part, and you know that even if you miss 30 seconds or if you slow down a little bit to get a good confidence boost in the first few controls, it's not like the other runners behind you will see you and catch you. And she was running a very solid race, a few small mistakes here and there, but she was never threatened for the overall win. And she started with a 4 minute gap and she won with around 10 minutes. There was a lot of mistakes in the group behind. Alexandra Hornik and Eva Likasiku were fighting for the second and third place in the end, where Hornik took a little bit better route to the last control, getting the second place, and Eva Likasiku taking the third place.
And then we can look at the middle distance there, third and fourth race in the men's class.
Yeah, so in the men's class, on the middle distance, there we had a Finnish victory. Topi Syräläinen, 1 minute ahead of Alexander Krato, and Simon Hector, magnifying his position in the hot seat for the overall, with a third place, losing only 15 seconds to Kratov. We saw Marius Tranödum, first really international representation of Farum Tisvil Luko. He took the fourth place ahead of a big group of Göteborg Majorna guys in fifth, sixth, and seventh place. In the women's class, it was a bit spread out, more than 3 minutes between the top six. In the men's class, it was slightly tighter, where the top six were within 2:20 or something like that. A good victory for Topi Syräläinen after the he was in the podium on the first day, third place there, and then he won the second world ranking event. Clearly, one of those guys who's been focusing on racing the world ranking events and then using the rest of the races like training. Good answers for him.
Yeah, Topi was quite happy with the races and he had mostly good execution. But in these terrains, it's you have to do the orienteering totally all the way into the control. And he lost 1.5 minutes in two controls. Or 1 minute in number 3 and 30 seconds in number 20 inside the circle. So,
And I mean, when you look at the maps, you don't always get a good picture of how difficult it is inside the control circles. But I saw some photos from the terrain, and the cliffs were massive. So like you could be inside a circle, but just on the wrong side of a cliff, and you have to run 50 meters almost to turn around and get on the top of the cliff. So you really have to be precise with your orienteering, and yeah, also you need to prepare the control good with the control description and so on, so you know exactly where the position of the control is. And therefore, when you look at the GPS, you don't always see the mistake, but you see that the runners are using a lot of time inside the control circle, which is always interesting.
Yeah, definitely. We can sum up the chasing start also there in the men's cross.
Yeah, so Simon Hector was starting with almost 3 minute gap of Alexander Kratov. Jonas Ekker in third place started like 7 minutes down. And then there was an 8-9 minute gap down to Ewan Trainer and Joey Hawthorn in 4th and 5th place. So here it was really, a fight between Hector and Kratov. And maybe Ekker could get into the fight if he had a super race. But Simon Hector started out in front, did solid orienteering, increased the lead all the way. And in the end, he won with 8 minutes over Alexander Kratov. So his victory was never threatened. A very solid race. He had the second fastest time of the day, only beaten by a surprise guy in Ben Mitchell.
We should give him a shout out. I mean, it's really impressive to have a best time here.
Yeah, and I think Ben Mitchell, he started out in like 8th place and climbed almost all the way to the top 3, but he got beaten by Joey Hawthorn in the end. Behind Hector, Alexander Kratov was running alone for the whole race, finishing 8 minutes down. And then it was a huge gap down to Joey Hawthorn in 3rd place, but he was 20 minutes down. So he also lost a bit of time to Simon Hector in the day, and then Ben Mitchell climbed to 4th place, but he was not strong enough to beat Joey Hawthorn in the last climb up to the arena and the finish sprint. But I mean, there is not a lot of guys that can beat Joey Hawthorn in such a head-to-head duo.
About Kratov, last episode we touched into comeback. That was in cross-country skiing. And about Petter Northug, here we are talking about Kratov. He's 1 year older than Northug, but he is performing quite well. Could we see a comeback here, or maybe?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. But I mean, I'm 100% sure that if Alexander Kratov wanted to do a comeback and he was training properly he's probably training quite a lot now, but he was training a little bit more serious, a bit more structured for 3 months, he would definitely be a guy that could be in the top 6 maybe, but at least top 10 in, for example, European champs middle distance. He's still racing a lot. He must be training quite a lot still to be able to race at this level. And with the orienteering technique seems to still be as good as it used to be. So he could still be competitive if he wanted.
Definitely. And we see here this weekend in Portugal that he is still performing quite well. From Portugal orienteering meeting, we can touch into, we have always restarted the real season a bit, but we have to talk a bit the silly season also.
So last week, not long after we had recorded last week's episode, I saw that Uko Ravinen presented two new runners, pretty young Swedes, Axel Olsson and Daniel Bogren, both of them coming from IF Hagen. I think both of them are living in Uppsala, so I mean, then Uko Ravinen is not the obvious club to go to, but I mean, there's there's a bunch of runners from Ravinen that is living in Uppsala. I think both Emil and Axel Granqvist, for example, so now they have their small Uppsala gang in Uko Ravinen. And I think, after losing Ruslan Glebov, it was obvious that Ravinen need a little bit more depth. And I don't know that much about these two guys. I know that Daniel Bogren, he's a really, really fast runner. He can definitely run the long night with the pack and stay with them without any problem. I think he had a top 10 time at the long night last year. I don't really remember which group he was running in, but it was a bit far below, but far behind the front group. But he's a very fast runner, a strong runner, so he will definitely be a good candidate for the Långenatten, for example, which for a team like Ravinen to have a runner they can put there and feel safe about it, that means they can use, for example, Emil Granqvist or Quentin Ratturer, the guys that have been running the Långenatten the last 2 years on legs where they are more needed.
And from runners living in Uppsala to a runner who is changing to a club in Uppsala?
Yeah, so Kaja Jørgensen from New Zealand, the daughter of the legendary Karsten Jørgensen. She's entered for some spring races in Sweden for Ukolne. So then I guess we can take that as a pretty confirmed stuff that she's going to run for Ukolne this year and probably many years in the future. One of the girls that, she has all the possibilities in the world. She's a good junior. We have seen before that runners from New Zealand have been able to reach very high level, both living in Nordic countries, but also staying in New Zealand. So she's one of the girls that will be interesting to follow for the next 5, 10, 15 years. And yeah, with Ukolinie shirt on the club side.
Yeah, Ukolinie is a really solid club, and they have good runners, both junior and senior in the women's side. So yeah, definitely good development environment for her there. And then there is another big club in Norway who is getting a good runner.
Yeah, I didn't quite see this one coming. I was just looking through the entry list for Maximus Umiting, and then I saw that the Finnish runner Aro Aho, he's been running for Valkeakosken Haka, his childhood club, for many years, and now he's going to run for Halden, it seems. And he's a very good runner. He's been running World Cup, European champs for Finland. I think he's about 24, 25 years old or something like that. And he's had some good first legs in the big relays. Definitely a guy that is going to make a difference for Halden. So that's a very interesting transfer to see. And it will be interesting to see if he's moving to Halden or if this is just to go to Halden to train and to get some new stimuli. I think he's been, when he's been running in his hometown club, in these Finnish relay leagues and so on, it's often in the team with his two brothers, and they are not at the same level as him, so it's often been like he's been running a very good first leg and then the team is fading when his brothers are running. Now that he's going to Halden, it will open a lot of possibilities for him in the relays, I think.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Also, Halden is getting interesting. If Olav Lundanes also is getting into the dress in the big relays, it can be real competitive, I think.
Yeah, and I see on Strava that Magne Dahle is doing his interval sessions on a regular basis. So we also saw last year that Guillaume Elias had a really good season. So I think a final trio with Aroa, Guillaume Elias, and Magne Dahle can still be very, very dangerous in their big relays.
The talk about Magne Dahle is that he's only on Strava when he's in good shape. So
yeah, then he must be really good form, because now he's been posting regular for quite a long time.
Yeah, but from Magne Dahle and rumors about him to real facts about Joey Haddon. We had a good talk with Joey, and maybe you can introduce him a bit for those who has been not so familiar with him or not following orienteering, maybe then.
Yeah, so Joey Haddon, I think he made this real breakthrough where he really put this footprint on the world of orienteering back in JWOC 2016 at home ground in Switzerland, where he won a couple of gold medals and medaled all four races, I think. Since then, he's been having good results internationally. Already in his second year as a elite runner, he was at the podium in the World Cup. In 2021, he won a silver medal in European Championship knockout sprint in homegrown in Switzerland, and also last summer he took the silver medal in the middle distance, and he more or less decided the relay on the second leg where he created a big gap. So he's one of the best orienteers in the world, and a guy that is sometimes winning races you expect him to have no chance. For example, when he won the middle distance in Idrefjell at the World Cup there, where it was a very difficult race where a lot of people were making mistakes, and then Joey Haddon came and did almost a clean race, which was a big surprise because he's always been seen as more of a physical runner than a technical runner. But winning World Cup in Idrefjell, second place in the World Champs last year in extremely technical middle distance. So he's pretty close to a complete orienteer.
And then we can hear what he will be doing this winter and spring to be even better this year. National Orienteering Podcast has got a really big star as a guest this episode. Medalist both individually and in relay last summer in Switzerland, Joey Haddon. How are you doing nowadays, Joey?
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I'm doing fine. Staying here in Portugal, first training camp. Everything is nice.
So it's nice. Last time the big audience saw you was in the international scene, was in the European Champs. Then it was a knockout between you and Kasper Fossa there in the quarterfinal. How was the recovery for you after that?
Yeah, actually, it took some time, the recovery. First, we thought it's not that big of a deal, maybe a little concussion. But afterwards, it was clear that when I went to the doctors that the nose was broken and there were some problems with the blood flow in the nose. So we had then to do maybe 2 weeks after the incident a surgery. And after the surgery, of course, everything takes its time, but then it went quite well. But yeah, it needed maybe some 6 weeks without really much moving or training to recover from that crash.
Are you, was the real setback? Were you annoyed with the headache or such things also?
The concussion was not that big of a problem because I anyway was not supposed to train that much with the nose and after the surgery anyway. So yeah, of course it was a little concussion and there was some headache in the beginning, but yeah, that's of course clear, and I took my time there and don't rush too early into training.
So you have a calm, and now you know you are training as ordinary, or
now I didn't got this question really.
Yeah, you took it step by step, and I know you are training as planned.
Yeah. Afterwards, the training went again as planned. Of course, a long break. It's also always a bit difficult then to start again. That everything is really moving right. So I had a little problems then afterwards to get in the really good training flow again. But right now I had some good weeks. Even I didn't run that much because I did a lot of alternative training in the Swiss mountains. But now I really like to start running more again and as well doing more orienteering.
Alternative training in Swiss mountains, is it cross-country skiing we're talking then, or?
Yeah, some cross-country skiing and some ski mountaineering and that kind of stuff, yeah. Using a bit of snow.
Yeah, to work on the capacity for your endurance sport. But about the crash there with the Kasper, do you think... should we have the sprint orienteering in areas where we don't have spectators among the runners, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the IOF have to think about it. I think we discussed it already a lot with some different athletes and also with some of the athletes' commission. And I think the some arguments were got forward to the IOF, I think through Gustav Bergmann, which I talked with. And yeah, I don't know if it's really worth it or how the pros and cons are about having sprint competitions in that crowded areas. I mean, the knockout sprint was not in a that crowded area, but for example, the sprint was really in a touristic city. And there, I mean, I also got once hit pedestrians a little bit. So I don't know if the benefits are that much, because I'm not thinking that too much of the tourists which were in the city that day were really enjoying that we are running there. I think they were not really interested and not following it probably a lot also at the arena. So I think the ones who are really following the competitions will anyway be orienteers and traveling there. So it could also be in a city like the sprint relay was, where everybody in the city probably knows that there is something going on, and they are also most likely more interested in maybe in this event, because there are not a lot of events in smaller cities. And I think for courses and stuff it was as interesting other cities.
Yeah, the sprint relay area was maybe best also because it was a bit more complex with some different challenges for the runners.
Yeah, exactly. Europeans, I mean. And I think there are a lot of these cities small. You have to, of course, think about how to do the course, but in sprint or also knockout sprint, it doesn't need that big of an area. And yeah, that could be interesting to not go to the biggest cities or most known cities and search for the little, more unknown cities where they also probably like to have an event and everybody in the city is looking forward to it.
Yeah, and it could also be possible with artificial fences or something to make it complex and challenging. To change between heats and so on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And of course, and then we discussed about the second topic that you could do something in the corners to avoid crashes. So, of course, one thing is to have a lot of volunteers who are looking at when someone is coming in the opposite direction and warning you. But there could also be something like little fences, little stripes going out of the corner, so that you don't can run straight to the edge from the corner, that you have to go around the little, as I said, fence, and therefore you have some milliseconds more time when the runner is coming the opposite direction that you don't crash. And I mean, it's also possible, or then you have more time that you can avoid for example, a pedestrian or someone who is there as a tourist, which you don't want to hit in a competition, of course.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Definitely. You have sent a letter to IOF about this, or just discussed with the runner representatives.
Yeah, well, I spoke with the runner representative, and so I think they already got some thoughts about in the evaluation after EOC, and they were discussing in the same direction. So now, I'm curious how they will manage it and how it will look like the next competitions, what they will change, and if there are maybe some of these points which got considered.
Yeah, that could be interesting already in the World Cup this spring. And we are also interested in here what you are up to this spring. Yeah, we hear that you are training quite well now, also in a camp in Portugal. What's your biggest goal this coming season?
Yeah, like it's changed a bit, of course, from forest to sprint with the world champs in sprint orienteering in Scotland. And of course, that's the main somehow goal. we have with coming up to this goal, it's the World Cup in Switzerland and Italy, which is also kind of a highlight to have a World Cup on home ground always. And yeah, now I'm trying to do a bit more forest orienteering in February, maybe March, and then changing somehow to the sprint focus and do more of the sprint. And right now I don't feel really kind of a fast. I haven't done a lot of kilometers running, and especially not that fast. So yeah, now I'm trying to build up and wait a bit towards the season, and then try to get faster and faster when it will count. That means, yeah, to World Cup in Switzerland and Italy.
Yeah, with such a strong team as the Swiss team, you need to perform also in those World Cups, of course. And when does you change your focus after March to the sprint? And what does that mean in training? Do you have shorter track intervals, or could you be concrete on that one?
Yeah, like right now I'm trying to put some volume in and also do alternative training. Of course, that changed now a bit to February. And then in March, we will have some camps, and we will do probably a bit of both sprint and forest orienteering. And then from April on, it will mostly be more sprint for the technical training. And then for the physical training, yeah, now I just train twice a week fast, try not to do a lot of intensity. And then towards the season, my plan is to do more intensive sessions. That means, yeah, maybe every second day something fast to get fit and fast for the competitions.
You are fast, but not the fastest yet. Number 7 in the Europeans in the sprint, 20 seconds down. What do you need to work on to catch those 20 seconds to be the best?
Yeah, of course, the routine has to be come back. I always need, or I think I need a bit more time to prepare those things. So even it was some time between the world champs and then the European champs, I didn't feel that I could work on all my issues which I have in the sprint. For example, like the starting period, which I felt all the sprint season, I would say, a bit slow. And it was also at European champs always a big issue that I didn't start that fast. So yeah, that I can work on that, of course. And then, of course, a healthy time for preparation towards these competitions. I think that's the most important. And in the end, yeah, it's always nice then to see. That's why we do the competition, and if it all worked out, if it all paid off, and then we will see who is fast and who is getting on the podium.
Yeah, but to be honest with you, this year the sprint is the main focus, and for you it must have been quite difficult that there are real successful world champs in home soil to turn on the volume and or the computer, or so to say, to the rest of the season after that. It must have been some post world champs feelings after this successful.
Yeah, maybe it was not all only because it was successful, the world championships in Switzerland, because it's such a big project. It was like 3 or 4 years which we known that. I really had that in mind all the way through the seasons. And now afterwards, it was, yeah, kind of you don't plan that much afterwards. You somehow also want a bit to relax. And like right now, I still feel like not really the same approach to the season if I don't know that this championship is maybe coming in the future. So I have to deal somehow a little bit with it. It was, of course, nice, and now it's a new somehow path, and I have to find some new goals and motivations to get on. And yeah, like the sprint is something I think I'm have quite good capacity there and quite good chances, but still I never really managed to do a really good sprint like the individual one. So yeah, that's a goal which I have through this season, of course, and maybe also for the next sprint focus.
Yeah, so actually you have been doing quite good in sprints already before the pandemic. We remember quite good sprint results from a young Joey there in Homsol in Switzerland in Laufen.
Yeah, I was once or twice close to the podium, but never managed to get on it and to have really the run I wanted to, at least in the international, on the international level.
But as I understand, it's quite focused on the sprint then this season. So so you will then have a minor focus on the Europeans and the Forests races internationally in the autumn.
Yeah, like I said, I try to do now in February, March, a bit both, or maybe more in focus on Forest, so that I have a bit of basics. And I think the European champs, of course, there you had before the World Championship focus in sprint, and this is really close, I think, for me, or in my opinion, it's too close for that big of events. I mean, it was World Championship, which you prepare several months before, and then you have European champs, and when you go for World Champs and the sprint, then you only have this 3 weeks, 3-4 weeks in between, and that's not kind of enough to get really a good preparation out of it. And that's a bit sad, because it's the second most important competition of the year, and to can be not able to really prepare that as it should be, yeah, it's not optimal for me. I think this year the program was a bit better when the European champs are later, but it is how it is. And of course, European champs is always interesting, and we will see. It's somehow for a lot of people like this, which are going to maybe both championships. And I'm looking really forward then to the World Cup in Finland, because that's somehow built up for the World Championship in 2025. And of course, in Scandinavia, it's always so nice to train there, to compete there in this terrain. And yeah, there I'm looking forward, and to also switch then again to Forest and focus for maybe, yeah, 1 year again more on the Forest in Scandinavian terrain.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you already talking about 2025. But you said that the home soil World Champs was a long-term goal. Do you have such a long-term goal now, or are you looking at each season as its own, as you're taking one step at a time?
Yeah, when I talk about long-term goals, it's maybe a little bit this World Championship in Finland, which is already in my mind, and I'm really like to build up to this competition, maybe a bit more than it is this season now. I kind of still. Little bit it's somehow feels more natural to me to do forest orienteering trainings. Of course, sprint is really fun, and I like to see how far I can get with my abilities, but still, yeah, forest is somehow why I started with the sport, and which I really most like. So that's a big goal, and somehow in this Scandinavian train in some of the big countries there in Finland, that's a big goal to challenge there the Scandinavians and the Finns.
Yeah, that would be really interesting, and I can challenge you with a question here in the end. We have seen you on the podium in the World Champs, but when will we see you taking your first individual gold medal?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I had I think my biggest chances were in Switzerland. I suspected it maybe a little bit more in the long distance than in the middle distance. But of course, you train for that, but I wouldn't want to name an event I think I'm a good runner, which is capable of doing podiums. But when it comes to really the winning the championship, it either have to be a really good day or good luck on this day, and it always depends on the other athletes which day they have. And so, yeah, I like to challenge the guys. Now it's then in Finland, so the Finnish guys will be under pressure on home soil, and I like to challenge them. And of course, the relays are always a topic as well, and there we looking forward with the Swiss team to probably get again the gold medal, I think.
Yeah, of course, you have the goal there from last time, and also aiming for a new. But we will wish you good luck and work towards some other successful races and maybe gold medals in the future, Joey. Thanks a lot for having time to talk with us.
Thank you.
With the last part to go.
We heard Joey Haddon there, and in the introduction of him, we didn't mention it, but it was quite a big topic in the beginning here in the talk about his crash with Kasper Fosså in the European champs and safety in sprint races.
Yeah, he's really, yeah, he's one of the guys who have been really been in contact with the danger of the sprint races, both with other runners, as his famous crash with Kasper Fosså in the European champs knockout sprint, but also with spectators, tourists that are not really aware of the sport orienteering, which he also mentioned that he, yeah, half crashed with the tourist in the individual sprint in Verona. So he's a guy that has been really been feeling this danger on his body. I think it's worth listening to what he has to say about this. And I think this is a serious issue for the sport orienteering at the elite level. And in one way, it was good that the European champs in Italy really highlighted this problem, because then maybe something can be done. It's not easy to say what should be done or so on. But yeah, as he mentioned, yeah, trying to avoid the most crowded towns, that seems like an obvious option. Even if you might get really cool TV footage from some famous touristic viewpoint or something like that, it's not worth it when it comes thousands of tourists in the way that this, yeah, partly making orienteering look bad as a sport, because it can feel quite dangerous for the tourist that is walking around, but also because when there's a lot of tourists around, there is also a risk that it's make the races unfair, because you have one runner that's have to run through a narrow street when there is a big group of tourists there, and maybe he loses 3 seconds compared to another runner that came through at the time there is no spectators, and then those 3 seconds can be a huge difference in the end. So safety and fairness in sprint races, that's a big issue. And of course, for the knockout sprint, maybe we should make the runners run with helmet and tooth protectors and so on. Maybe some learn from the alpine skiers. There are many, many options.
But from safety in sprint races, we can also talk about Joey. He's getting medals in the forest last year, but this year is chasing forest. No sprint medals, I mean, in the world champs. And he is, his chances there. How do you evaluate them?
Yeah, I think it was very interesting to hear his point of view. Like, he has some bigger issues that he has to work on. For example, the first part of the races where he often loses a bit of time. So far, he's been mostly competitive in the knockout sprint. He has a silver medal at European champs. He has a second place in the World Cup before COVID 2019. So he is definitely able to compete for medals, especially in the knockout sprint. But I guess he has some work to do with his sprint routines and sprint technique to be able to, yeah, to maximize his potential also in the individual sprint, because. Yeah, he's definitely a guy you would note down for for an outside chance for a medal, but he's not, as it is now, he's not the guy that you mentioned as the biggest favorite for a race in sprint.
But it was interesting. He liked orienteering in the forest the most and was really fanced about 2025 when the world champs in Finland.
Yeah, I think we see that with a lot of non-Scandinavian orienteers, non-Nordic orienteers, that they have kind of a, yeah, there is some burning desire. They want to prove themselves in Nordic terrain because historically it's always been, yeah, orienteering has been a sport where, yeah, maybe the Nordic mindset has always been that the Nordic runners are better orienteers, better technical than the non-Nordic countries. And I mean, for runners to be, then from Swiss runners, French runners, and so on, to be able to win in Nordic countries, that has always been really big. You know, when Thierry, he won his first world champs in Switzerland, and then, you know, maybe people said that, yeah, okay, he won in continental terrain, it will be much harder for him the year after in Scandinavian terrain, and then in, he won also in Sweden, and that was huge. Mattias Kubowitz, when he won the middle distance in Sweden, the same. And yeah, so I think it motivates these runners to be able to beat the Nordic runners in Nordic terrain. And yeah, I mean, Joey Hadron, he had his last year as a junior, he had jaywalk in Finland. And I mean, when you're a junior coming from a non-Nordic country, that's hard to compete with the Nordic runners because you don't have the possibility to spend that much time in Nordic terrain. Now that he's 8 years older, he has 8 years more experience, he has more possibilities maybe to go train in the Nordic terrains and to better prepare for the world champs. I think he has a better chance in 25 than he had back in jaywalk 2017.
I think all the runners who competed Olli Ojanen in the junior class thought that was quite tough.
Yeah, definitely, and especially, yeah,
Olli, when he was in home soil there in Tampere.
Yeah, and I mean, it for Joey, it will be the same now. Eight years later, he still have to go to Finland to beat Olli Ojanen now.
Yeah, but from talking about Finland in 1.5 year, we can talk about what's coming up this weekend. Quite exciting, also, I would say. Definitely, Maximus Umiting. Maybe tougher competition there than in Portugal Umiting if we are looking at the entry list here.
Yeah, this is Maximus Umiting is it's pretty new. It's been around for 5, 6, 7 years or something like that. But it is forming up to become a winter classic, and now they have also increase the program. So now it's 4 days with races. It start on Saturday on the coming weekend with the long distance world ranking event. Then there is a middle distance world ranking event on Monday. There is a sprint, and then on Tuesday there is a chasing start over a classic distance, so a short long distance. And then when it's four races, and you know the overall every race count, and there's a chasing start in the end. It's kind of hard to know who will be the favorites for the overall because you don't really know who will go all in for all four races. Sometimes you also see runners that they are running Saturday and Sunday and then they travel home on Monday or something like that before the race is really over. But we have a extremely interesting start list. In the women's class, there is 65 runners entered in the elite class, so pretty big start field, but it's a very, very good start field. We see some big clubs are picking Maximus for their winter training camp, and then we also have some really, really good runners here. So I think if we start with the biggest name on the women's side, it's Tove Alexandersson, no doubt. And it will be very interesting to see her racing here now because the last few years she hasn't been doing much orienteering at winter time. So I would suspect that her physical form is really, really good, but yeah. How good is her orienteering routines? We will see. And that can maybe open up for some other girls that have been doing more orienteering lately.
She was not in so good shape in the ski orienteering world champs a couple of weeks ago, just coming back from COVID. So maybe not so good physical, so she would like to be.
Yeah, and she will face some proper competition. Marie Olausen, her teammate from Stora Tuna, is there. Also, both the Swedish champions from last year, Tilda Östberg and Rebecca Heinrup, the winners of the Noko Sprint and the Ultra Long, they are here. Iktisa is here with the full team, so meaning Alexander Hornig, Hanna Wisniewskava, Sandra Gråsberga, and Ausrine Kutkaite, for example. We have some good runners from Halden and from Antony, Maëlle Bouvier, the French girl. Then maybe Megan Clark-Davies will be racing this week. She's been struggling with injuries, and in Portugal she's more or less been cruising around training speed. So it will be interesting to see if she's now feeling ready to try to compete maybe in the middle distance or in the sprint. But yeah, I think with the last few weeks and months she said, I think it's unrealistic to talk about her in the sense of the overall here.
But there are also some interesting Norwegians.
Yeah, so from Antony we have Anne Dyrkorn, fourth place at World Champs middle distance last year. She's a good runner. And also Oda Schiele, which was running for Ukoliné last year, and now she's studying in Trondheim and is running for Antony. Also a very interesting name. But yeah, it's a lot of good runners here, and it's a very good start field. But yeah, I still kind of expect to see Tove Alexandersson completely crush everyone on the first day on the long distance, winning with 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes as like normal.
And how will you expect to crush the others in the men's field then?
Yeah, I mean, the women's field is good, but the men's field is very, very good. So yeah, Stora Tuna is here, and that means there is a lot of strong runners in yellow and black. We have three of the Svensk brothers, Emil, Victor and Jesper. Henrik Johansson is here, Olle Kalred is here, the new runner Ville Johansson is here. Antony is here with many of their best guys. Langedal Breivik, Sander Arntzen, Anders Westøl, Oskar Edvardsson, the three guys that were winning medals at Norwegian Championship last year. Mats Eidsmo is also a guy that can be doing good. Halden is here with Elias Gilhem and Arvao, for example. A guy like Kratov is coming directly from POM. He has Timo Sild and Bartosz Pawlak there with him from Kove. We see an interesting start in Axel Elmblad. And Bredaryd is also here with Emil Auselius, the guy that won the first leg at Jukola last year. Ralph Street is here, the World Cup winner from last year. I think he's been struggling with injury, so I'm questioning how much he can run and how fast he will be running, but we will see. Cornelius Bjørk, the young Norwegian guy, is also here. We see Marius Strandaudum having good results at POM. He's also coming here. Last year at Maximus U-meeting, Tuukka Seppä had a really good long distance race, and he's also here. Michal Olejnik has been on the podium overall in Maximus before. He is here. Quentin Mollet, and yeah, Oskar Hagström is also here. Oskar Sjöberg, and then also some other young guys that have been winning medals at J-Walk the last few years. This Hungarian guy Jonas Ferenc, the Norwegian guy Tobias Alstad, and so on. So it's 200 runners entered in the men's elite class, so it will be hard to get into the super elite or the elite one. And I expect it to be a hard fight here, and there's not easy to point at one guy as the big favorite. But if I had to pick one name, I'd say Viktor Svensk.
And then, of course, we will record next week also, that we can count in if you have right when you're picking Viktor Svensk.
Yeah, we'll see. It's always going to be close. It's always going to be hard to guess these winter races. But I mean, for sure, we will see some good races, and I'm looking forward to see the courses in live blocks and so on. Because yeah, I mean, I've been to Maximus two times in the last 5 years, so it's a type of terrain I really like to run orienteering in. And yeah, hopefully they are lucky with the weather. Last year when we were there, it was really, really cold and windy and almost snowing. Hopefully they get better weather this year.
Yeah, and of course we will follow it tight. And then, as I mentioned, we will record after the chasing start on Tuesday, so we can follow all the Maximus U-meeting. And then we will be back with all the fresh results from then.
So until then, bye-bye.
Mannen dro ut og løp orientering med kart og kompass og med rektige sko. Sikta sågar etter beste notering, for kroppen var lett og god.
I vår National Orienteering Podcast, Map and Compass, Navigation Skill, Orienteering Competition.
Jeg bommet noe jævlig på bossen her oppe.
Running like a motherfucker. I vår National Orienteering Podcast.